Welcome to the Boomer Woman's Podcast, where we are embracing the journey. I'm your host, Agnes Knowles. There are times in life when everything looks like it should be settled. The career may be winding down, the children are grown, and on paper, it might even look like freedom. And yet, something feels unsettled. Maybe it's a sense of being stuck, or maybe it's just a quiet sense that something has shifted, even if you can't quite name what it is. In today's conversation, we explore what's really going on in those moments, not just in our lives, but in our thinking. We talk about transitions, about the stories we carry, and about how what feels uncomfortable might actually be growth trying to get our attention. Listen now to my conversation with Madeleine Weiss. Today's conversation is for anyone who has ever thought, I should have this figured out by now. So why does it still feel so hard sometimes? My guest is Madeleine Weiss, the Harvard-trained psychotherapist, executive coach, and mindset expert who has spent her career helping people navigate change, stress, and those moments in life where everything shifts, whether we planned it or not. She talks about transitions, the big ones like retirement, identity shifts and changing roles in our families, and also the quieter ones that happen inside our own thinking. And because many of us are deeply connected to the lives of our children and grandchildren, we'll explore how mindset, stress, and personal stories shape the next generations, and what role we can play in that. Hopefully, this is one of those conversations that gently holds up a mirror and maybe helps you see yourself with a little more clarity and a little more compassion. Madeleine Weiss, welcome to the Boomer Woman's Podcast, where we are embracing the journey with a little bit of help from guests like you. So thank you.
Well, actually, when you just said to see ourselves with a little more clarity, I thought, is she talking to me? Because I'm thinking that in the few minutes I've had with you already, I just might come out of here with a little more clarity about myself.
Oh, isn't that funny?
So thank you.
That's, listeners, that's 3 minutes of conversation about name enunciation.
Well, because, yes. But when I was listening to you speak, I was thinking about my granddaughter, and I was thinking about my impact on my children and the pluses and minuses of what it was that I wanted to impart. So you already have me going. So thank you,
This could
Agnes.
be an interesting conversation then because as I was creating notes, everybody knows I come with notes, it was really hard not to just be using personal stories. And I wanted to keep it sort of out there for the audience as well. So we'll see how it goes. We'll just play it by ear like we always do. Now, you've worked with people across so many stages of life. Is there one struggle you see that surprises you because people don't talk about it enough?
Well, I can tell you one that came up so many times this week. So it feels big, and what it is, and it has to do with transition. So I can't tell you how many people have come to work with me feeling either very depressed or very anxious, and what they learn, which is such a nice revelation, really, is that the tree wants to grow and the bird wants to fly, and so do we. And when we are standing still in our lives, the brain doesn't enjoy it, and neither does the rest of us. So we feel icky, and then we start blaming it on the job or the spouse or the kids or the dog or the management of whatever. And actually, it's just that it's time to grow. So and then people think, and this I think is really key, that they're supposed to know exactly how they're going to grow. So then, and it has to be like worthy of them. And they have to be sort of proud of it, be able like to talk about it at a cocktail party or whatever. It has to be that good. So then it's way up there and out there, and they're over here feeling stuck because they're afraid of change. And then they just by setting that up, make themselves feel even worse. So I guess I would boil it down to acknowledging and then nurturing growth is a really nice path to health.
Is there ever a time, though, where that static position is the prelude to the growth? So it's a matter of like, even if you say, okay, like given all the circumstances and you can really look at your situation, in the fall, this, and this will have occurred, and that will be the right time for me to do whatever or to grow or to move or whatever. Is there times when being static is okay? I mean, and we just need to figure out how to make it okay.
Well, in a way, it's always okay. There is a purpose to it. We wouldn't have survived and thrived to be here, to be even talking about it, if we didn't have the capacity to conserve resources and find safety, which is kind of what being stuck by one's own accord. So it's hunkering down, either to play it safe or to conserve resources for the next big move, or so I'm very clear with everybody. This is not a bad thing. It's just not the only thing. And so most people I find with when they bring this up, they both want to stay where they are and move forward. And whichever one is stronger wins. So the more we can make it conscious so that we're in charge of it instead of it in charge of us, the more we can grow the idea to move forward. And then I invoke the Goldilocks principle, which I think you were touching on, that the steps be not so big that they overwhelm us and shut us down, but big enough to titillate the brain's motivational centers. So yesterday, when I was seeing this wonderful woman that I work with, and at the end, she happened to mention that she made this phone call about her money, and she made this phone call about talking to somebody about something a career change. And I said, well, why did you tell me you're stuck? Like, I'm confused if you're stuck, but you did this and you did this. And she said, well, like it wasn't they weren't a big deal. So I said, yeah, well, we have to fix that. And that was when I told her about the Goldilocks principle, that you don't want it to be so big that you're going, oh my God, I can't. But it has to be something. So your brain says, something new and different is happening here. I like that. I think I'll try some more.
Is being stuck sometimes the safe place to be? So you say, okay, this is really frustrating and I don't like it and I really want to be over there, but even taking those baby steps can
All
be.
things considered, it seems for the individual who's doing that, see, they feel like it's something that's being done to them, but it's not. It's a strategy. So the person who's doing that, I think, is very often doing that for the reason you say. And then you said the other reason they might just be pausing to gather their resources for the next step, which is a little different from safety.
Okay, about 3 minutes ago, you said something that triggered a thought, and it's the people who say, I'm fine. And it's one of those words that I seriously dislike, and I never trust it when someone says it to me.
I'm laughing because I actually am addicted to scrolling, and I
Okay.
always see these Instagram reels where the husband is
Oh, yeah.
saying, if she says she's fine, you're in really big trouble. So go on. I'm sorry.
No, okay. So Is that just a classic cover? I'm
Could
fine.
be. Yeah, well, yes and no. I mean, I don't know whether this is written anywhere that you would have seen it, but I studied Advaita Vedanta, pre-Hindu tradition, for about 25 years.
Okay.
And especially when I was pretty deathly ill, one of my tutors would come to the hospital to visit with me. Wonderful, wonderful systems analyst, gorgeous woman with such hands-on. And she would say, you know, it's possible to be happy and sad in the same moment, which at that point I hadn't considered. I figured it was one or the other. But also, they teach you that in this moment, truth be told, in this moment, isn't everything just fine? Like right this second, if you don't think about the past, if you don't think about what happened right before you got on the call or yesterday, and you don't think about what's going to happen tonight and what do I have to make for dinner or that phone call you don't feel like getting on or whatever it's going. If you don't think about the past, if the mind wanders 70% of the time, and it's very often into the past or the future, and some of us go one way or the other more than the other. But if we get some control over that, and keep it. I hate to sound so trite because this is kind of overused, but really, in this moment, everything is just fine. And so that way, fine is not, it's not a cover, it's the truth.
I guess where I'm going, though, is the fact that if you say, Agnes, how are you doing? And I say, I'm fine. That sounds different than I'm fine. Because I don't think the second one, if I did it right,
Well,
sounds like I am actually fine.
I will say that the quieter we are inside, the better we are at picking up those nuances so that you can notice when someone's words don't match the energy that you're taking in with them.
So, if we are very sure that, as you say, the energy doesn't match the words, so the I'm fine is sort of, you can hear the door closing, but it's a friend, so you want to take it a little bit further. Are there words we can use to open that door back up a little bit? If it's someone we know, I mean, with a stranger, better be careful. Well, I would think that I would be careful. But when it matters, are there words we can use to sort of press the door
What do
open a
you
wee bit?
usually do?
What do I usually do? Guess it depends on who I am, who it is. Because I probably say something like, it doesn't sound fine to me. Is there something going on that you want to share? You know, because obviously some people need to process, or once again, you're hearing all my thoughts. Let me psychoanalyze myself. You know, sometimes people just need to process through things. And then they can say, you know, when you asked me yesterday, I wasn't really fine. But now that I think about it, it's this. So I guess it's just a matter of being careful.
I was going to say, it sounds like you're recommending treading lightly.
Yeah, especially if it's, well, if it's a relationship that matters, then yes, absolutely.
Okay. That's fine.
Oh dear, okay.
I mean,
I want abs.
has that come up in a lot in a way that
Well, I think it's come
feels
up. I don't, because I'm creating scenarios now for our conversation. So it's not like I can say, oh, I remember 3 days ago when I was talking to so and so, and you know, they gave me that tone of voice. But
Well, I'll say this, that right now, I don't know who's 100% fine.
okay.
We live in a very noisy, uncertain world. I heard a lot of people in one of the arenas of my life complaining a lot lately. And I mentioned to the person that the complaints were directed at, I know you mean really well, and this is not your intention. It's 180 degrees the opposite of your intention. And I said, and I don't even know how much of it has to do with you, because people are so agitated, unsteady right now, that to your question about fine, I pass a lot of people in the hallway and they say, "How are you?" And I say, "Good, how are you?" The good doesn't even feel appropriate with so many people suffering in the world. So you raise a point, I think, about how awkward it is when there is so much feeling in so many people so close to the surface, and then how do we best navigate that, like in the most helpful ways? And you're saying that if I'm hearing you right, you're saying there's the potential for being sort of too overt, too aggressive, maybe even to correct the falsehood if it feels like a falsehood, and then you sort of land it at being tender. So basically, I think we all would do well to be really tender with each other right now. I mean, that's always a good way to be, but I think especially now, I think these are very tender times.
And you just used a word that, because you can't really say, "Oh, I'm good," at the risk of splitting hairs. If someone says, "How are you?" And I don't want to go there, I say, "I am well," because in terms of my health, I am well, thank you. And so it's evading it, yet still giving the right
I have a
answer.
funny story to tell you.
Please do.
My mother was, before she passed, in a kind of a swanky, actually, assisted living.
Okay.
She was also up and down the hallways. And she complained that everybody would say, "How are you?" And then people would answer the question about their this hurts and that hurts, and they got this diagnosis, and the kids don't come to visit, and whatever,
Yeah, every
just
complaint in the,
just going. And so my mother told me she figured out that to the same beat of "How are you?" she would say something different. And what she would do is she would walk by you and say, "Nice to see you," and keep walking. So she didn't say, "How are you?" She said, "Nice to see you." And it wasn't a question, and she didn't have to listen to the answer, which I just thought was a classic.
I
But
had a career in elder care, so I know exactly what your mom is saying.
But it was actually, in addition to somehow it hit my funny bone, it was actually not a bad idea, because it was a greeting, it was an acknowledgement, and it was boundary setting. So,
There you go. You have to go phone your mother later and say, "Good move, Mom."
Well,
Okay, let's go to retirement now. Oh, maybe she's yucking it up with mine then too. Going to retirement, it's supposed to be such a freeing time.
I think it's highly overrated.
Well, okay, and I always use retirement air quotes. I think I, well, no, take that out. I know that I mean, when I say retirement, giving up the 9 to 5. But it is a transition, and that's, what one of your gigs is, transition. So what's going on with, we're talking to mid-age women, when that sort of 60, 65 age comes up, maybe 70 comes up, and changes are expected or even desired.
By
But
whom?
well, you name it, spouses, children, employers, their friends. It could be anybody that's, just even asking. Are you going to retire next year? When are you going to retire? That sort of thing.
Yeah.
And as I said, there's people out there that say, oh, 2 more years and I give up the 9 to 5. But it's still, even if you're excited about it, it can be off balancing. Is that what I'm trying to say there?
Well, it's a crisis of sorts. And if you define crisis as what used to work doesn't work anymore,
Okay.
it makes that a crisis because people's whole lives were organized around this major consuming activity. And minus that, one has to adapt to a different set of circumstances. And also, while we're doing definitions, a definition of stress is not even necessarily anything bad. In fact, from the 1950s, there was this thing called the Holmes and Rahe stress scale. And, after death of a spouse and divorce and things like that, they would have things like going on a vacation was like high up on the stress scale,
Okay.
or getting married. So they'd have all these joyous having a baby. And the reason for that is that the bigger the adaptation, the more stressful it is because it calls on the organism to spend lots of resources of all kinds trying to adapt. I'm not even going to say cope. I'm going to say adapt to the change in internal, external circumstances. And I think a lot of people don't see that coming with retirement. They think woo-woo and don't realize that there's an adaptation that has to take place, and the body will experience it. It will be felt.
So, I mean, I guess one of the biggest ones of the things you said is childbirth. Such a joyous occasion. But especially that first child, it's like you don't have a clue how much it's going to change your life.
Right.
And it's that unknown. And then there's always,
I
even
have a
once you,
scale on my desktop that shows like happiness over the life span. And during, I'm sorry, during the child rearing years, and I have kids who are going through this, and I have clients who are going through this, it dips. Now, most parents come out the other side really glad they had kids, but still there's this dip when they're adapting to this enormously draining change in their lives. Fortunately, the kids are so cute, that it kind of reminds you of how much you love them, and it makes it work. But
there's so
yeah.
many people thinking things out there right now. Okay, I'm going to go slightly sideways. I heard you say in one of your videos that emotions are very important. They're data. Now, I'm big on that whole term of data, like whether it's, medical information, whatever. It's information. Can you go there? Can you follow that up?
Yeah, I can. I think that a lot of people have said that they learned that decisions were supposed to be logical and that their emotions were not supposed to have anything to do with their decision making, and that they had to figure out how to capture it and park it. I remember going through a life crisis, and someone said to me, "Leave your emotions outside the door." I mean, it was as concrete as that.
Is that possible?
Some people get really good at the word is isolating
Okay.
their emotions or compartmentalizing. And there are scientific studies. I teach a little decision making. So I have all these studies that show that decision making is highly impaired when the emotions are not taken into account. The judgment is off. So I have examples of that. But the point is, you don't want the emotions driving the bus. You
Okay,
want
yeah.
the emotions to pick up the sensory data. I'm doing this because this is the hand model of the brain. So this is the amygdala that picks up. I don't know if I like what's going on out there and starts flailing around. I've actually seen it with people who get like an investor will show some interest in their company and they get so excited. So that's like, so it's not just negative, it could be positive. And they get so,
And I'm just going to say for our listeners, because we're an audio podcast, you are waving your thumb about
I
in
am
front of an
waving
open
my
hand.
thumb.
No. So the amygdala is your thumb and it's getting excited. Okay, please continue.
It's Dan Siegel's hand model of the brain, which
Okay.
can be Googled.
Good. Okay.
So the idea is when the thumb in the middle of your hand is flailing around all over the place, it knocks the four fingers. So instead of having a fist, it
Got it.
knocks the
Okay.
fingers offline. So there's no connection now between your emotional center that's picking up all the data from the outside and any logical thinking. They're not talking to each other. And you have no access to your logical brain. And you'll notice that when you're really upset, you'll notice you're not thinking straight. That's kind of what they mean. So on my website, there's a tab that says, I think it says Power Breathe.
Yes, it does.
And if you click that tab, there is a one page that instructs in a 30-second mindset reset that I call power breathing because it's so powerful. So what that does is it stimulates your parasympathetic nerve that runs from your abdomen all the way up to your brain, and it centers you so you can focus, so you can think. It brings the higher brain back into connection with your lower emotional brain center. So the emotions can say, I don't know, there's something going on, and your higher brain could say, thank you for telling me. I got it from here. But you need both.
I in my own brain, I'm thinking of the number of times, and I think stuck in traffic when you need to be somewhere is a really big one. And I remember just, and I've done this repeatedly, is leaning back, making sure the shoulders are low, and going, I have no control here, really. So it is what it is. I will get through it. It may take 20 minutes instead of 2, but I cannot control that. So settle down. So,
You know, there's that saying they attribute to Nelson Mandela, but I think it was not he, but he does get the credit for it. And it's something like, well, probably because he said it, but I think somebody else, but anyway, that idea that anger, hate, resentment
Okay.
is like drinking poison and hoping it will kill the other person.
Okay, yeah.
So when people have road rage, I don't know, it strikes me as a really good example of that, because what they're doing is messing with their own cortisol levels in ways that are very, very bad for their health. That jerk in the car over there is not affected at all. My son said to me one time, Mom, why does everyone give you the finger all the time?
Because I'm always right, son.
I was doing the best I maybe I wasn't a good driver. I was doing the best I could and figuring everyone else thought so too, I guess. I don't know.
Well, you
Anyway.
know what I also, I mean, just staying on this whole driving thing for one more minute is, when I feel myself ramping up, I do remember that the only person that's ramping up here, if I flip them off or do whatever, is myself. They'll never know. But I
And they
also
won't
know,
care, even if they do know.
well, except that I also don't know what their story is. So maybe their only child has been hit by a car and they're racing to the hospital and not even thinking, except they want to get there.
Right.
So it's just like we don't know what their story is. Settle down.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Well, and it's really good to remind yourself that it's hurting you.
Yeah, for sure.
People think, and this is a pet peeve of mine, that venting is like an always good thing. So, like getting it out and railing and raging all over the place, like so many people are doing today, is a good thing, but not necessarily. For example, trauma theorists have found that they used to think if you suffered a trauma that you should find someone that and or people should find you and have you talk about it and talk about it and talk about it. And what that does, they found, is there's like in your brain, there are neural connections about the trauma. And every time you fire them by talking about it, thinking about it, going over and go, you make them stronger. So they impose on you even more. And that's like much newer thinking than the old thinking that people should get it out. Like, so road rage is like a way of getting it out. And also, like when somebody's done something really awful to us and talking about it and talking about it, talking about it, talking about it, is supposed to make it better, but it can really make it quite a bit worse.
I do find that interesting because I thought, probably even said it out loud, is the more times you tell that story, the more it normalizes it and brings the temperature down. Because if it's just normal, or if it's been normalized, then it doesn't carry the heat of the impact. But
Well, okay, there's that. There's also having telling someone has someone bear witness. So one has not gone through this alone, which is critically important. But there's a point beyond which it does more harm than good.
okay.
So
Okay.
I guess the rule of thumb would be if one is doing that, I think people do that a lot in divorce, let's say, So if one finds that they're not actually feeling better, it's because it's strengthening the hurt part and making them feel just chronically in it, like it's happening. Almost like PTSD, like it's happening over and over and over and over again, and you never get to step out of it. So, yeah. Anyway.
Good. Okay. So staying with us midlife women, are there consistent stories that some women carry into this mid time that in fact limit them? Or is it completely individual?
I'm just trying to think about that. I don't know. I think I'd lean toward the individual. And I don't think of it as just women either. I think that we all like figured out kind of like a strategy for the schoolyard.
Right, okay.
And we're still using it because it kind of worked. Whatever it was, but it was designed by a 5-year-old, which means we have a 5-year-old in charge of our life. And so I'm always saying with my clients that, of course, you did it that way. What else were you going to do? Like, there might not have been a whole lot of other options. And even if there were other options, this one seemed to work well enough that you used it again and then again. But now you're 40, 50, 60, whatever you are, and you're using a strategy that was designed by a 5-year-old 50 years ago. So it's a great idea, again, always, to make that unconscious conscious and see if it still makes sense. And often it doesn't.
I'm enjoying this because there's a like a dozen places. I've been taking some notes here, but there's a dozen places that it's like, okay, we could go down that alley, but I'm going to try to stick to the theme here. And just one aside is that I always address issues. Almost always address issues on podcast about the women because it is the Boomer Woman's podcast. I do understand that, you
Got
know,
that. Got that.
men, yeah, men have issues and experience a lot of the same stuff, but they just have to adapt the listening if they're listening.
Got it.
Okay, personal, well, sort of personal question here, I guess. In all the work you've done helping others, is there anything you've had to sort of learn the hard way yourself?
Do you think, are you asking me if there's a mistake I've thought I've made?
Well, not necessarily a mistake, but you know, I'm sorry, your education is very impressive.
Thank you.
And it's relative to
I'm really
what you.
grateful for my education.
Yeah, no, I'm
Great.
sure.
I'm really great. Yeah. Okay. All
So
right.
I guess
Go.
knowing something and proceeding that way are not always the same thing. So I guess I was just sort of curious whether, you know, like on a clinical level, you know what next steps should be. But I mean, I'm the person that always says, don't worry about me. I always figure things out the hard way because it's only I remember mistakes, whereas I don't always remember successes. So I guess I'm just asking you a similar question.
Yeah, you have to help me with the question.
I mean, you've dealt with, I don't know, dozens, maybe hundreds of clients. So
Okay.
you've seen many, 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 many scenarios, which also adds to that education, I would think.
For sure.
Okay. In your own life, have you ever come to a situation where experience, education, all those factors should maybe help you sail through it, but you still go, ah, that's a verb.
Yeah, okay. So there's a saying I hear now that is something along the lines of like, who do I want to be in this world? And there were times in my life, well, it cuts both ways. There were times in my life where I wasn't who I want to be in this world. And there were times in my life that I am so proud of, I almost can't stand it. And I just made that sound. Now, see, this is what I mean. Like, I might learn something about myself here. I just made that sound like the positive ones were more powerful than the negative ones, didn't I?
That's what I heard.
The latter one, where I said I was so proud of it, I almost couldn't stand it. The other one was like, oops. And it wasn't just oops. There were times when I wished I had conducted myself with more grace. But the times that I had were so magnificent that, yeah.
It's
So do you see both in yourself?
Oh, absolutely. And one of the biggest barometers are my kids,
Yeah.
who are young adults. They're all in that 40 age range. And, whether they're doing the same thing with their kids, and I go, ooh, 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 or they'll actually say to me, oh my God, Mom, I was thinking the other day about that time that whatever happened. And fortunately, when it comes from my kids, it's pretty much, there's only one incident that, but I had an explanation, where they go
We
like,
always do, right?
it was all her fault. That, they remind me of how I aced something, or how they really learned, or they really respected me for something. And those are the moments that I go like, yes, and as you say, it just blows it up so big, whether it's in your heart, your soul, your head, your brain, whatever, that, yeah, it far outweighs, even though there's always going to be that niggling bit of, guilt or something because I messed up. But
You know, if we can keep that balance that way, it's kind of like what I was saying about the parents with the newborns. You know, the positive is so magnificent that it makes the rest of it bearable.
I call it forced amnesia. Like childbirth, stuff like that is,
You
I
know,
mean,
my son said to me just the other day, am I kids tease me mercilessly. So
I'm there too.
this was unusual. I mean, he'll usually write something nice in my Mother's Day card or my birthday card, but he sent me a text and he said, I was outside bike riding with the kids, and I remembered when you used to make me a special lunch and take me out in the back on the deck, and we'd eat it together and talk. And I thought, he thinks I'm dying. That's what he said.
Jeez.
He must think I'm dying. I was like, why did he say that? Anyway, but it's so sweet.
Well, but the thing is that I don't even hardly know you, and I certainly don't have a clue who your son is, but I'm thinking, I'm really glad he said that to her because,
Was nice, yeah.
no, it wasn't nice. It wasn't fine.
It was fine.
It was
No,
lovely. No, it was lovely.
it was. Bring it on. Bring it on.
Yeah, exactly. I need one a week, son.
Actually, the thing that I was thinking about that was so magnificent was when I was dying. I was in the hospital with flesh-eating disease, believe it or
Oh
not.
my
Like,
God, okay.
who gets that? And, I was in the hospital for 7 weeks. I had 10 trips to the OR, and I think they wanted to send me home. This is really disgusting. They had gouged out my whole arm. There was almost nothing left but the bone, and they said, "We'll just close that up, and you'll go home and get some rest." And then later on, when you feel like it and you're ready, you'll come back and we'll make it like presentable. And I said, I didn't even like flinch. I just said, I am not going anywhere like this. And I'm not leaving until you do something, do the best you can, and I'll be here until you do, kind of a thing. And they did. And I look back on that and the agency in that. And it was magnificent. It wasn't belligerent or anything. It was just so firm. No. So I teach my clients this thing I call a power no. So a power no is a no that preempts a holy mess down the line, which that one did. It would have been, I can't even tell you. It would have been, yeah. So,
And I think, and what did you call it again?
what, a
A
power no?
something no, a power no. Thank you. Just, I'm sure they don't come into one's life very often, but acknowledging that if that's what the brain and the gut and all the different parts are telling you,
You
go ahead.
know, the infectious disease doctor, I was at Mass General's, which is a pretty good hospital, and the head of infectious disease there, when they finally admitted me, which took three times to get in, he would get, that was bad. And he said to me, "There's something about you. I see it in your eyes. I don't know what it is, but I think you can fight this. And if I'm wrong, you're dead. And this is the hardest decision I've ever had to make in my life." And I thought that was when I was, that was part of those 25 years when I was learning about ancient philosophy and meditation. And I thought he saw the clarity and the quiet. It sounds like I'm making a pitch for meditation.
It's
And
okay. I think it's a great idea.
I know that it's not for everybody, but I think it did something that allowed them to have faith in me that they could see that quiet and that calm. And also the 30-second mindset reset is easier. And if you do that every day, that's also good. But I'm a big fan of that centering because I think it allows us to find our own truth, to find our own strength. As we were saying earlier, the quiet allows you to actually tune in to others. So even though it sounds woo-woo and touchy-feeling, I think there's really something to it.
Every 20 episodes or so, I explain that I once heard someone explain the term woo-woo as anything is possible. And it has stuck with me. And so whenever somebody uses the term and then tries almost to explain it, it's like there's no explanation. It just means anything is possible.
Well, I think people think if they get into something like meditation, that they'll go soft, that they'll get lazy, that they'll get dull, that they won't react quickly because they'll be so laid back. And it's just the opposite. It's so clear and so strong because of the quiet inside. So, by the way, back to the beginning of our conversation, when people are trying to figure out what their next move in life is, they think they have to do all the stuff out there to figure it out. And I say, get quiet. It's on the inside. You just can't hear it. You can't see it. You can't feel it. Just get quiet and it'll bubble up.
So here's a question. I don't know if you can answer it or not, but that's the first time I've ever heard that someone might think getting into meditation and that sort of thing would make them soft, not
Really?
as fast with the reaction. So where my thoughts went is, do you hear that because you are used to dealing with high achievers? Like it,
I'm
could
trying
that
to think.
in, you know, going internal, could that possibly in their mind soften them from that drive?
Yeah, I think that's what I'm thinking like a couple decades ago, it had become the rage with Jon Kabat-Zinn, and it got popularized. And it's not so much in your face now as it used to be. But back then, when it was, the counter to it was that it was woo-woo, not the way you mean it, but
Yeah.
like just
Out there, yeah.
like Zen, chill. And yeah, the high achievers, a lot of whom I work with, don't want to be chill. They want to be ready for action. They want to be on their toes. They want to be ready to move and they want to be clear. They want to be smart. They want to be all those things. And this does that because because of the because it's like a radio with static. It removes the static, which is great.
Okay, I want to fit in grandchildren while we're here. So many, I mean, yesterday I just spent the whole day with my two of my grandsons. Many of us are involved in the lives of our children and grandchildren. Is there anything they can get from us that they might not be getting? And we'll just stick with grandchildren, too late in our kids. Is there anything they can get from us that they may not be getting anywhere else?
What are they getting everywhere else?
I don't know. I mean, I guess there's school, there's peer
Oh,
groups,
I
there's
see.
all
I
that sort of
see.
stuff.
Yeah.
But we are one generation above the parents, and I find that really works in my situation.
You know, there is a lot of literature on this. Something about that the reason women live so long. And I think it's called the grandmother effect. There is something, and I don't have it at the top of mind right now, but anyone can look it up and try looking it up under the grandmother effect. It might be called that, or it might be called something else. But there is something that they get from grandmothers that they don't get anywhere else. And when we're done, I'm going to look it up.
That's interesting because my brother uses that term, the grandmother effect,
Oh, he does. Okay.
on because especially my eldest grandson, he's, a number of years, probably 6, 7 years older than any of the other children. And he spent a lot of time in the first several years with me. And so he has always been what a person might call an old soul. His way of thinking, he's calmer, he looks at both sides of many stories. And as I say, my brother calls it the grandmother effect, as opposed to just winging off because they don't have life experience. So that's an I'll look it up also and see if my brother made it up or if he knows something that he
No,
didn't tell me.
it's a thing, and it's all over the literature. Do you want me to see if I can find it real quick?
No, I'll look it up and I'll put it in a link in the show notes.
Okay, because now I want to refresh on it too.
Okay, so how about the stories we're passing down? And that could be intentional stories or just unintentionally because we mouth off. How does that, or maybe how should we be aware of them, I guess, is.
Yeah, well, these are very touchy times. There are so many disparate points of view right now among well-meaning people that I believe we as parents and grandparents need to remember, and I work on this, that there's educating them so that their perspectives are informed, which for somebody of the mind feels like love, but it might not feel like love to them.
The
Certain
life
major.
experience. Well,
Well,
it's
certain.
interesting because my 16-year-old grandson understands that. He understands that I have life experience that even his parents don't have. And he'll corner me about issues, like really specific issues. And so he knows how I think about politics and religion and a bunch of things. But after, and I guess these days it's often a political discussion. I
Right.
will say to him, you know exactly how I vote when I go into the booth. Now you have to go find somebody who goes in and votes the other names and find out why. Because you can't just be my mini-me.
Right.
And so it's interesting now, just that critical thinking, I guess. I interviewed somebody a few years ago, and that's her gig is making sure our youth are growing up to be critical thinkers. So if you hear something, or if you, like a teacher says something, 16, he can go on, he can check on the internet. And I've also t explained to him that you check your sources on the internet,
Yeah.
so yeah, it's, and then I guess there's just the family stories too. I don't think I get questions that are more, life-oriented, shall we say? That's a nice ambiguous term. To the point where there have been times where we're driving, right? It's great when you're driving because there's no eye contact.
I heard
And
that that's the perfect time to
yeah.
talk to a teenager
Oh,
is
absolutely.
when you're driving because there's no eye contact.
Yeah. And I did it with my own kids, and now I'm doing it with my grandson. And he will ask, because he knows I have a variety of friends, shall we say, he'll ask questions that, as he's asking it, I'm going like, oh God, we're going here. But he knows that I'm going to tell him, to the best of my ability, the correct answer. To the point where I will, after he leaves, I will phone his mother and said, okay, he just asked about this, and this is what I explained. So if he has information that you don't have a clue where it came from, guilty, you know, it's my fault. So yeah, it's a really, I don't know. I don't have to tread carefully, but I think I am careful.
I am too. I am too.
What's your story? Oh, dear. And that's a lead into your book. What's your story? Yeah, tell us
Yeah.
about that.
Actually, my granddaughter helped me with this.
Okay.
And we have a really nice bond about writing.
Ah.
That's a thing that we really, really connect on. So, what do you mean?
I guess convince our readers that they need to go get your book, What's Your Story?
Oh, for sure. I can do that. So all of my clients would say to me, or many would say to me, like we do work together, and then they'd say, well, how come nobody told me this when I was 8? Like it could have saved me a lot of trouble. And I went online and I did a book search to see if there was any book for children on how the mind works and how the mind makes up stories that we then believe are real. And then we live in that story like it's true and real and forget because we didn't know that the mind made up the story in the first place. And so I couldn't find a book that did that. I found books on mindfulness and they were great, but they didn't talk about like how the brain works and what the mind is and what the difference between the mind and the brain, which is the hard question and blah, blah, blah. So all of that is in this workbook, which has all kinds of,
Oh.
no one can see ever. Yeah.
No, that's great.
I love this
So
book. I
if it's
love
a
the way,
workbook,
yeah, I
if it's a
just
workbook, we buy one for each of the grandchildren.
look how cute the pages are.
Oh my goodness.
Isn't that
Those
cute?
are great. Yeah. And that's we're not going to say anything more because we need to lure
No,
listeners in to
because no one can see. Yeah.
Okay, now we're also mostly adults in the room. You have a book called Getting to Great, Great.
Indeed.
Tell us about that one.
So this one, I noticed that my clients were all doing really well. And I said to myself, so like I studied evolutionary psychology and psychodynamic psychotherapy, and I went to business school and studied group dynamics and who individuals and how individuals are in groups and brain science and on it went, all this stuff all over the place. And so I said, what are you doing with them? Like, what are you doing with your clients? Like, what are you doing? And then they, all the clients, were all so different from each other that I thought, like, what is happening here? So I took all their files, you know, their manila folders. I sat down on the floor. I put all the folders out like this, and I'm saying, what is it that all these people have in common?
You.
Oh, you're sweet, thank you. What process are they going through in common? And I came up with these five steps. And then you can only imagine how happy I was when I saw I could break this down into the acronym great. Like
Very,
G
yes.
dot R dot E dot A dot T. I was like, yes, this is great. So that's what the book is about. And yeah, it's a story how people grow. So there are case studies each chapter. So there are chapters on how to deal with other people, how to manage your mind. I love this one, Mastering Your Mouth. And it's not about eating. And work-life quality, time, money, play, and then the future for us. And so at the end of each chapter, there's a vignette about a client with the name changed, of course. And I've changed more than the name just to be as careful as I could. A story about somebody's emergence on that topic. And then there's a practical exercise to go along with it. And my favorite one is the one about money. But it all has an evolutionary bent. So it takes us from like the beginning of money, like how did that even happen? And what did it mean? And what has it come to mean now that it was never supposed to mean in the first place? That's like not it. So. And it explains all of that.
Okay. Is there anything we haven't talked about that you want midlife women to think about, to understand,
You
to
know, there's
implement?
one thing that whenever I'm fortunate to be a guest, as I am today with you, which I appreciate so much, there's a thing that doesn't come up. And it's important. So I always bring it up at the end. And it is the concept of good company. And I learned that when I was studying Advaita Vedanta. They actually have one of their Krishnas or whatever wrote a book called Good Company. And it's not just the people you hang out with, although it is that, but it's also the food that you eat, the books that you read, the music that you listen to. It does include the people you invite into your life. And most importantly, good company applies to the thoughts in our head. And not all of them are good company. So we become mindful of picking and choosing the best quality of everything that enters into our life that we can. Good company.
So, what I'm hearing is that we need to look at all of those pieces and really choose what is going to be in our own best interests to move forward to the next act, chapter, stage, whatever,
Is
tomorrow.
this good company for me? Is this that scrolling I do? Is that good company? No, it's not. Or some TV show that people might be watching. Is that good company? No. But there is plenty of good company available to us. And if we put our minds to it, we can really up level the quality and enjoyment of our lives by, as you say, choosing.
So earlier you said that you know the person that you want to be. A person hopefully then will say the same thing. This is the person I want to be. This is the person I want my world to see. How do I get to that level? And
Well,
in terms of,
this is the person I want to hang out with all day, all night for the rest of my life.
there you go, that, yeah.
Right?
So, yeah. So those soap operas, those whatever, blah, 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 blah,
Whatever it is.
blah, they're not getting me to that place, or they're not helping me become that person. Yet these other pieces are worth
It's
investigating.
pollution. Pollution.
Yeah. That's an impressive idea to end on. I like that. Thank you. Where do we find you on the World Wide Web?
Easy. MadeleineWeiss.com.
There you go. Okay, and you're on social, I see.
Yeah,
LinkedIn, Facebook.
so all of my social links are on my website, and the website link is MadeleineWeiss.com. I also offer a complimentary strategy session, and there's a link on the website if anybody wants to set up one of those with me to dig a little deeper on
All
any
right.
of those things. When we were talking about the kids, you said something like you imagine that there'd be some buzzing going on about that out there in the audience. If anybody has any questions or comments and they want to talk to me further about that, that would be fine.
And listeners, if you're listening to me over the weeks and months and years, you will love talking to Madeleine because right from the get-go, it's just like, oh my God, I could talk to this woman for
Yeah,
hours.
ditto,
So,
ditto. Me too, me
yeah,
too,
that's
me too.
great. Okay, I got a little bit personal earlier, but can I ask you a personal question before we close?
Sure.
As well as us mid-age women, you help high achievers. Are you a high achiever? Is there a story you can tell on yourself?
I am happy to report, and this might be at least something to do with my age. So many people walk around feeling not good enough. I feel so good enough that I wish that for everyone to feel that you're not perfect, you never were, you never will be, and you don't have to be. What you have to be is good enough. And it's a really nice, I was going to say, it's a really nice achievement. Speaking of high achievement, maybe there is no higher achievement than finally getting to the place where you have arrived at, I'm good enough.
And I will tell you, listeners, that in the beginning, when I mentioned before I clicked record, I think I said something that I was right smack dab in the middle of that baby boom. And Madeleine nodded. So she's not far off. So it's not like we're talking to a young person here. This is great.
Oh, for sure.
There
Definitely
we go. Okay. So your website link and well, it's in the show notes, but all of the links are on your page at our website. Listeners, thank you for spending time with us today.
Thank
If
you.
if this conversation resonated with you, be brave and tell us what you liked and also what you might have questioned. Because yeah, with the give and take there, it was really interesting. Remember, these conversations are meant to be shared, so send it to a friend, keep it going. And of course, follow the podcast so you don't miss future conversations with more great guests. If you'd like to listen early, I release each episode on Substack on Wednesday evening before it goes live everywhere else. While you're at Boom with a Bang, checking out Madeline's links, check out what's on offer at the Start Here page as well. Madeline Weiss, thank you for being my guest today
Thank
and
you,
making
Anna.
what you do so pertinent to mid-age women and the grandmas among us. I really, really appreciate that.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Have a great rest of week.
Okay.